Heidi Harris. Welcome to the Heidi Harris Show podcast. I do this three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You can check them out at iTunes or at HeidiHarris.com. I also post them on Facebook and all social media. Why did Ralph Peters, Fox News strategic analyst for over 10 years, recently leave Fox? He's going to be joining me in a moment. I want to mention that my book, Don't Pat Me on the Head, is flying off shelves and flying out of my hands at book signings. I've got another one planned for Saturday, April 21st at New Frontier Armory in North Las Vegas. New Frontier Armory in North Las Vegas on Saturday morning, 10 to noon. So please plan to join me there. Well, as many of you know, Ralph Peters, Fox News strategic analyst for over 10 years, recently left Fox News, and there was a bit of a dust-up when he left. Ralph Peters is my guest on the Heidi Harris Show today. Ralph, welcome as always. Great to talk to you.
Well, Heidi, I am always good when I'm speaking with you.
Oh, that's great. Now, everybody knows you left Fox News a couple of months ago, and talk a little bit about that real quickly. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but you apparently had sent a memo to your colleagues that was never supposed to be leaked, and somebody leaked it and tried to make you look bad, and of course, the lefty press tried to make it look like you were trashing Fox. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I was trashing Fox because Fox has gone off the rails. I was very proud to be associated. I mean, I worked at Fox for a decade, but in the last year and a half, the evening hosts have become rabid liars who are deceiving the American people every single day, and they're attacking the constitutional order of our country and the rule of law, and I will not be part of that. As a military officer, I took an oath as a brand-new second lieutenant to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. In my personal view, Fox is now attacking the constitutional order, and I can't be part of that. Just, you know, it would be a breaking my oath. I mean, I just think Fox is doing a real disservice to the country. And that doesn't mean the other cable channels are guiltless and wonderful, but Fox is currently has turned into pure propaganda for the Trump administration. I have a background in Soviet affairs. I don't do propaganda for anyone. And other people will have different views. But I had to act on my conscience and my views, and so I did. Now, I had written an internal memo to Fox telling them why I was leaving, and I felt that Fox had gone off the rails, and somebody leaked it. And I don't think they leaked it to try to make me look bad. I think they leaked it because there is a lot of unhappiness at Fox. A lot of people feel it's gone off the rails, especially particularly the evening shows. But I had to, you know, I'm a little farther on in life, and I was able to walk away from it, while other people can't walk away. They'd like to, but they have kids in college. They have huge D.C. mortgages to pay and or Manhattan mortgages, so they're kind of stuck. But it's I did not want it all to go public. I wasn't trying to publicly embarrass Fox, but when a memo's leaked, you have to own up to it and live with it, and I certainly don't retract a single thing I said. And I don't want Fox destroyed. I want Fox to clean up its act. I want somebody to rescue Fox. Because if you listen to Laura Ingraham or Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity, with whom I used to get along quite well, these people are pouring poison into the American political vein. And I just could not be part of it, even at a remove.
Interesting. Do you think they all three believe this, or you think they're doing what they need to do because the higher-ups told them that or because their viewers expect it?
I think they're doing what makes them popular. I mean, they're in the business of being popular hosts, and with Trump's hardcore base, they're perfectly happy trashing a genuine war hero like Robert Mueller, who's been a model public servant. And you've got all these people, again, people who, like, you know, Laura and Sean and Tucker and so many others who've never served in our military, and they're trashing a war hero. And I'm not going to be part of that either. I mean, these people have done nothing for our country. I mean, you look at their records. Tell me what they've done for America. But they're perfectly happy to tear down other people. And it's just gotten out of control. I just feel that, you know, nobody knows exactly what another person's motivations are. But it appears to me that Tucker and Laura are pretty cynical. They'll do anything they can to get ahead, in my view. That's my personal view. As for Sean Hannity, I think he's a true believer. I think he has really been seduced by access to the president, and that's very access to the president of the United States is a very powerful thing. And so I kind of feel sorry for Sean. I just feel like he's gone off the rails. But I have no sympathy with Tucker or Laura.
Yeah, it's so interesting because it's tough to find a legitimate, objective piece of news about Donald Trump. He's not great. He's not the worst thing ever. Somewhere in the middle is the truth. And if you say anything, certainly I have, I put anything on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that about him, criticizing him in any way, asking any legitimate questions, and I get trashed. And it's scary that the right is following him so blindly, just like many people on the left did with President Obama. It's been a little shocking to me.
Well, I think it's even more fascinating with Trump because, you know, as a believing Christian, I am stunned that evangelical Christians are supporting Donald Trump,
right,
who is, at best, a very immoral man. Now, you're right. I mean, President Trump has done some good things, and he's done some things I think are terrible, and a number of things in between. But you have to be able, this is the United States of America. We have to be able to criticize our leaders based on facts. And that's the key thing for me. You know, Heidi, in the past, I've been fierce in my criticism of Obama. I've criticized Trump. I've criticized the members of the Bush administration, but based on the facts. And we're turning now from facts into propaganda. We're, you know, and I tell people, look, there may be additional facts. There are no alternative facts. Facts are facts are facts. And I, it is hard to find objective news sources that stick to the facts. Some outlets are better than others. But when it comes to President Trump, we have to be able to legitimately question his actions when we think they are wrong. And as far as the Mueller investigation goes, it astonishes me that there are any conscientious Americans who don't want to know beyond a shadow of a doubt, beyond the last sliver of doubt, that Vladimir Putin has no influence on this White House. I mean, let's hope there is no influence. Let's hope President Trump gets a clean bill of health. And I think Robert Mueller will pursue this objectively. And Trey Gowdy, Republican as they get, made the point that if the president has nothing to hide, he should welcome the investigation. And that's my bottom line.
Yeah, well, Trey Gowdy, of course,
former
prosecutor, so he knows quite a bit about the law,
right,
obviously.
But in this country, you know, we have to cling to the Constitution. Administrations come and go. What matters is the Constitution. And in our Constitution, no one is above the law. You know, at least in theory, a homeless person and the President of the United States are both equally subject to the law. Now, we all know that it doesn't always work out like that, but we have to do our best to make that principle apply, that before the law, in front of the law, all men are created equal, and women too.
That's true. We're speaking with Ralph Peters. You know what's scary to me is that when I posted something about Stormy Daniels the other day and this raid on the law offices, and I said, listen, you know, this does matter. Character matters, and this is why character matters, because when you screw around on your wife, then you can be blackmailed. This is a distraction now. And I had people defending this like it's no big deal, or Clinton was worse, or this or that or the other. Should we expect nothing from our leaders? I guess not.
Well, it's not much of a defense to say Clinton was worse.
Right.
You know, you can argue, you know, which jerk is a bigger jerk, but a jerk's a jerk. And, you know, you've told that in your career, too. And my God, it just stuns me that the people that claim to stand up for private and public morality refuse to listen to any criticism. And I'm sorry. Personally, I am offended that, you know, a man who became president of the United States has had affairs with porn stars of various natures and paid money to hush them up. I mean, that's not the way we want America to look in the eyes of the world. And our public image is important around the world. The president's image is important. The dignity of the office is important. You know, I was no fan of President Obama. I thought he was a terrible president. But you know what? Credit where it's due. In his behavior, he never disgraced the Oval Office. He was a good family man, and he, you know, many of his actions were terrible for our country, but at least he comported himself with dignity in public, and I just miss that under President Trump. The President of the United States should behave with personal and public dignity, and I'm sorry, I don't care which party a person's from. The model really was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, even on weekends, he would not set foot in the Oval Office without a tie, a jacket and tie. I mean, that's how much he respected the Oval Office. And Heidi, in the last quarter century, we've just gotten away from that. The last fully qualified president we had with the right resume, the right dignity, the right capability, the right understanding of the world, was George Herbert Walker Bush. That's more than a quarter century ago. Since then, we've had, you know, a huckster Bill Clinton, a well-meaning mediocrity George Bush, the dog that caught the fire truck, President Obama, and now Trump. And in this age of hypermedia and the Internet, I'm just starting to wonder if we will ever be able to elect a really qualified president again, because it's all about how well you come across on TV and how many lies you can tell rather than qualifications and dedication to the country. And, you know, I'll tell you, this week, President Trump, I mean, he really lost me this week when he claimed that the raid on his lawyer's office was an attack on our country. No, that raid on his lawyer's office was in accordance with the law under a federal judge's order. That's the way the Constitution works, buddy. And if you don't like it, you certainly should resign your office.
Interesting. And now he's talking about what a loser this guy is and this and that and the other. And using language that previous presidents certainly were tempted to use or certainly used behind closed doors. But the
right.
fact that you're running around calling these people names like you're in a junior high school playground, that's the thing that I think affects the dignity of the White House. But, you know, there are people on the evangelical side, like you and I are, who will say at least he's pro-Israel, at least he's got somebody great on the Supreme Court, at least he's defending religious freedom. But unfortunately, you know, you can't look away from all of the other problems and just talk about the achievements.
Well, I certainly support his moving the embassy to Jerusalem. I don't see where he's standing up for religious freedom, really. He's done, you know, the harder line on North Korea has been good. President Trump's done some good things. My point is just that when he does something good, we should applaud him. When he does something poorly or bad, we should criticize him. And that's the way the system works. Blind allegiances are for dictatorships.
Yeah.
You know, that's the blind praise of a Stalin or a Mao. In this country, with our freedom of speech under the First Amendment, criticizing our leaders keeps the system honest. And also, you know, again, I go back in again. It's very simple for me. I took an oath to the Constitution. The Constitution is the core of the American idea. And anything that contravenes or assaults the Constitution is wrong. And you don't get to pick and choose. You can't say, oh, well, I like the Second Amendment, but I don't like the First Amendment. Right? You know, I like the First Amendment, but I don't really like the Fourth Amendment. No. You sign up for the Constitution, it's 100% Constitution, Bill of Rights, all the amendments. That's the way our system works. You cannot cherry-pick the Constitution.
Absolutely not. And to your point about following, there's a quote from Dwight Eisenhower I put in my book, I'm paraphrasing here, that basically if 158 million people are following a leader, it's no longer America. And that's the truth. I mean, we're supposed to be able to question our leaders here in America without being called a sellout or some of the names you've been called, I'm sure, and I've been called as a result of daring to ask a question. It's pretty sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And this is not the American way. I mean, I was just speaking in Texas this week to a couple of great audiences, wonderful people. And what I really found in them, we talked about American history, but it ended by talking about the current situation a bit. And what I found in these people from both sides of the aisle was that the average American doesn't like this polarization. They really want us to come together. Most Americans, right and left, are closer to the center than they are to the extremes. But the extremists right and left are the people that are dramatic on TV, that make headlines. And whenever I speak, and I speak a lot, and I find that people really, they want some sensible, sane middle ground. They don't want our country torn apart. And to me, the fact that friendships break up over politics or that a family feud erupts over politics, look, we can have strong opinions, but we have to remember a couple things. One, we have the right to criticize. Two, sometimes the other guy is right.
Right.
And you have to, in America, our politics is not a zero-sum game. The founding fathers set our country up to be horse trading. This side wants this, your side wants that. So, okay, I'll give you some of this, you give me some of that. That's the way the system's supposed to work. And the idea that, you know, if we don't get every single thing we want, we've been betrayed somehow. That's not American. It just isn't. We settle our differences peacefully. And again, We swap. You know, this is important to you, so I'll give you that if you give me this. And the system also, people are so frustrated because it works slowly. The founding fathers designed the system to work slowly,
right.
So we couldn't do really dumb stuff fast.
Right, exactly, right. Real quickly, I want to get to Russia and Syria and that kind of stuff. You got a lot of criticism for talking about guns after the last massacre, and you were saying that people don't need AR-15s. You know, my only thinking, and I'm not going to argue with you about that one way or the other, but, you know, my thinking is, shouldn't we be able to have the weapons that the government has? Because look what happens when people don't.
No, because our government is not a threat to us. And I know people are going to go nuts because they think the government's a threat. Here's my recommendation to people that hate our government. If you want, you think our government's so bad, protest. Don't take your Social Security payment. Don't take your disability payment. Don't take Medicare. Don't take Medicaid. Don't take those handouts from the government. The hypocrisy drives me crazy. Our government, for all its many flaws, works amazingly well. It's a rare federal bureaucrat who goes to work every day thinking, how can I do a bad job for the American people? There is no secret deep state. I've been part of this government and around it for many years, and of course it's flawed because it's made up of human beings. But show me a government somewhere that works better. Russia? China?
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly.
Syria? I mean, you know, you can't hold people to an impossible standard. Only God is perfect. Human beings make mistakes. But we, on the whole, make fewer of them. And our government does a pretty doggone good job overall. And also, when people are telling me the government's coming to get us, I ask them, and I never get an answer. I said, what has our government done to you personally? How has our government hurt you personally? And it's like, blah, 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 blah. You know, the cable news, and that's one of the reasons I walked away, but cable news and the internet craziness have thrive on hatred. I mean, the wilder, the crazier the accusations on the blog, the more likely the far right or far left are to glom onto it. And it becomes self-reinforcing. So I think Americans, we need to get back to the most archetypal American who ever lived, and it was actually a TV character. And that was Joe Friday on Dragnet. Remember Joe Friday?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just the facts, man.
Yes, wouldn't that
and
be
I
nice?
I want the facts.
That's true. Speaking of Russia, let's talk a little bit about that, because I know you follow that very closely. I would consider you're an expert on Russia. What do you think is going to happen next? I know you've been concerned from day one as to whether or not Trump has some kind of tie or Putin's got something on him. There are other people who are concerned that he calls everybody else names except Putin. What's your take on it right now?
Well, I've been concerned about Vladimir Putin since the year 2000. Because I've worked with the Russian security agencies, you know, face-to-face in the Kremlin, elsewhere, and I know those guys, and don't underestimate them. And Putin, he certainly makes mistakes, but on the whole, that guy, he's a poker player, and he's played a pair of deuces and a pair of fours as if he's holding a royal flush because he's a bluffer, and nobody calls his bluff. And he's done an amazing job of taking this ruined country with a tin pot military and turning it back into the semblance of a superpower. And he was always underestimated. Putin was underestimated. Europeans made fun of him early on because he was at banquets chewing with his mouth open. And, you know, we didn't take him seriously because he didn't go to the right prep school. He didn't go to the right university. He didn't have credentials like somebody like John Kerry. But I tell people, it's not the insiders who change the world. The John Kerrys don't change the world. The people that change the world, for better and worse, are the outsiders. Jesus Christ, Muhammad, Napoleon, an infantry lieutenant who becomes emperor of most of Europe, or Hitler, or Stalin, or Mao Zedong. These guys were not part of the establishment. It's the outsiders who see the opportunity, who are daring, and just grasp the chance to change the world. And so Putin is a very, very dangerous man. And my concern with President Trump was that, you know, he is unwilling to personally criticize Putin. He behaves as if Putin has a grip on him. Now, we don't know that, but my position is simple. We need to know, And so the Mueller investigation, led by a lifelong Republican, Robert Mueller, needs to go through to the very end. And if there is nothing there, no charges can be brought if there's no evidence of crimes. And if there are evidences of crimes, then we need to know about them. So I'm just saying, look, let the system work. Our system of government has worked very well for us for over 200 years. Let's give it a chance to work. Be patient. If the president has done nothing wrong, the president has nothing to fear. You can't just make up the evidence. It's either there or it's not. So I beg people, have some faith in the American system. Whether you're far right, far left, or in the center, have faith in the system. It hasn't failed us yet. And look at other countries have collapsed. Governments have collapsed. Some countries have actually disappeared. Empires have disappeared. And all through this, the United States of America, although we fought a bloody civil war, and one was enough, nonetheless, despite all the changes and tides of history, we're still here. We live amazingly well, in amazing safety, in the greatest country on earth, bar none. And we are ungrateful. Yes. And that's what bothers me the most about our country today.
Yeah.
Americans are ungrateful for what we have, for the privileges, the opportunities we have, for the safety and welfare in which we live. I mean, this is a great, great country. And to see people on the Internet who know nothing, who have never done anything for this country, never served it in any capacity, to have them tearing this country down just makes me furious.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, too, Ralph, is that a lot of these kids are not taught in school anything about history. I actually put up a picture of a pile of dead bodies in Ukraine from World War II, and I mentioned something about guns or something like that, and somebody said, oh, I'm offended by this. You're offended? It's history, my friend. But people don't want to accept it, and these kids are just morons today.
Yeah, we took history out of the schools because it wasn't important, and as a result, people have no frame of reference.
Right.
They don't know how hard it was to build this country. They don't know the sacrifices, including the sacrifices in the blood of our citizens, that were made to get us where we are today. So there's no sense of service. There's no sense of responsibility. And you know, that's another big topic for another day. But I think of us as the ungrateful nation. We have so much. So much is given to us. And we're angry because we don't have more.
It's interesting. My husband and I were watching the other night. We've been really addicted to these YouTube videos about history, various history things. And I know you're an expert on Russia, so this won't surprise you. But I was really aware how many times they've been conquered throughout history. We don't understand that. The constant takeover of your government every few years by some Mongol hordes or somebody else or some dictator or whatever. I mean, we really do take for granted the fact that we've been very stable since we've been a country.
Yeah, when you just basic things like the government, except in very rare cases, the government can't just walk in and take your house today. The government can't just arbitrarily put you in prison. I mean, we have amazing safeguards. Again, the system isn't perfect because human beings aren't perfect, but it's awfully good. And for the great majority of Americans, the government works pretty doggone well. And, again, those Social Security payments, they go out on time, and I don't know anybody who turns them down.
That's absolutely true. Real quickly, before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about, I want to talk about your latest book. I know you're always writing, and we'll talk about that. Syria, I know that you and I've discussed it in the past, and you think we should have done a lot of things years ago that weren't done. What can we do at this point? Should we even get involved?
Well, it's really a tough situation, because there's no uniform answer, no single answer that applies from the start of the Syrian war to the end. Much about military intervention or diplomatic actions are based on timing. It's where you are in the struggle. For instance, very early on in Syria, a very small U.S. commitment would have toppled Assad. The game would be utterly different. But Obama could never make up his mind to do something. He was a Hamlet president, forever wringing his hands and saying, to be or not to be.
Right.
The guy could not make a decision. And so 500,000 people died. A year and a half ago when the Russians went in, I thought, this is interesting. This is a chance, because Putin thought it was going to be easier than it was. He thought he'd be in and out in a few months. I thought, let the Russians get bogged down. Let it be their Vietnam. But the decision was we would go in, we'd work with the Kurds. And now that we have done that, Now that the Kurds on the ground have done the hard fighting and given the blood, we can't just walk away from them. Because it, already our allies are worrying about us not being there for them, not honoring alliances. And they need to be able to trust us. And the Kurds are really a test case. They've been the best allies we've ever had in the Middle East outside of Israel. And so we absolutely need to stand by the Kurds. That doesn't mean we have to have an endless presence of tens of thousands of troops. But, you know, advisors, planners, some air cover, that's actually a pretty good investment. Investing in the Kurds, I think, is a good investment. Meanwhile, let Russia and Assad and Iran know that there are limits to what they can do. Now, as far as responding to the latest chemical attack, unfortunately, our president got it wrong. He did exactly what he accused Obama of, and rightfully accused Obama of, telegraphing our punches, telling the enemy what we're going to do. The correct approach would have been to be quiet. Well, you certainly could criticize the Russian chemical attack, but don't say we're going to come at you. Don't say we're going to attack. You don't tell them. You just surprise them at 2 o'clock in the morning, because you tell them in advance that, yay, we're sending in the missiles, then the Russians have chances to alert everybody to reinforce their air defense system. We've already seen the Syrian government has moved aircraft and other assets. What they do is they move them closer to the Russians so that if we hit them, there's a danger of us killing Russians. So, you know, walk softly and carry a big stick was always a good rule. Unfortunately, President Trump makes a whole lot of noise, and then sometimes he does something, sometimes he doesn't. It's a really ugly situation for us now, because after he's made all these threats, if he doesn't act, we look weak and laughable. If he does act, it could escalate out of control.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, this week he is, the Trump administration has handled Syria very, very badly. Now, I think Jim Mattis is the voice of reason. Jim Mattis is a great American. He's trying to come up with good options for the president. And we'll just see what happens. I mean, I trust Jim Mattis. If Jim Mattis is for something, I'm for it, because I've known him somewhat for 15 years or 16 years, and he's just a great Marine, a great American, and a truly, truly honorable man. So, you know, Jim Mattis is sort of my last hope here.
Yeah, I love having him here. Okay, one quick question on Mike Pompeo. How do you feel about Mike Pompeo?
Well, he deserves a chance.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of qualifications. He certainly has been in the game now at CIA. He knows what the problems are. I think the questions posed yesterday to him on Capitol Hill were the right ones. You know, will he be a yes man? Because what the president needs in his advisors aren't people that are always looking for a fight. He needs people who are willing to stand up and say, Mr. President, this time I think you're wrong. Here's why.
Right.
So I'm afraid that right now Trump is... The people that were willing to stand up to him are gone, and he's getting people who may actually just reinforce his impulses. So we'll see. I mean, Mike Pompeo may turn out to be a great Secretary of State. He may be a poor one. He may be a mediocre one, but he deserves a chance.
Absolutely. All right. Now, Ralph Peters, award-winning. People don't realize this about you. Well, multiple awards for your books. I know you've got a new one out. Tell me about it, and tell me what you're working on next.
Well, the last one was came out several months ago. Judgment at Appomattox was about the dramatic closing 2 weeks of our Civil War. Fighting every day is a dramatic time in a very different country. And the one I'm working on now, I'm working on a prequel to my Civil War series. This will be at Chancellorsville, dealing with Stonewall Jackson, and who was an ineffable character in many ways, very complex, and trying to wrestle with him and understand him as fully as possible. That's what I'm doing now, but I am dedicated to writing about American history in a way that's fun to read and digestible and informative and very accurate, because, as you observed earlier, Heidi, Americans don't know our history, and they need to know it. So, you know, I think I'm done with TV. You never say never, but I'm just sick of cable news and what I regard as the moral corruption and the dishonesty on both sides. And so I want to just dedicate my time to helping Americans better understand our history and who we are and how lucky we are to live in this country.
Absolutely. And your Civil War novels are fantastic, and you've written other books, of course, too. Now, where can people get your books, Ralph?
Just any bookstore.
Just Amazon or Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very widely available.
And they are fantastic, by the way. I've read several of them. They are excellent. Ralph Peters, as always, thank you for the time. Thank you for your clarity. Thank you for your honesty about this crazy situation. Sometimes, you know, wonder if there's any normal thought out there, and there certainly is in your case.
Well, thank you very much, Heidi, and congratulations on your new book.
Thank you very much. We'll talk again very soon. Appreciate it, Ralph.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. So it's great to talk to Ralph Peters, and I don't blame him for wanting to be away from cable news. I got to be honest, I don't miss the commercial radio cable news side of it either. But you know what? In America, we're supposed to be able to criticize our leaders, and that's not about bashing Trump. You're bashing Obama. You're bashing Trump. You're bashing this one. You're bashing that one. No, we in America have the amazing ability to be able to question our leaders without winding up in front of a firing squad. And we should be grateful for that. I'm Heidi Harris. My new book, Don't Pat Me on the Head, is available at Amazon.com. And it's called Don't Pat Me on the Head. You can also get it at Audible. And, of course, I recommend Ralph Peters' books. Get Ralph Peters' books. If you're into Civil War history, especially, his books are fantastic. They really are great. So my books and Ralph Peters' books at Amazon.com. On my next podcast, we're going to talk to a man who hands out tracts on the Las Vegas Strip. What is it like to talk to people about Jesus when they're in Sin City? We'll talk about that on the next podcast. Until we meet again, remember, you were created for a purpose. Here's Tony Scottwell.